friends and enemies. Welcome to Bad Voltage Season 3, Episode 60. Can you believe it? We are 60 episodes into the third series with no sign of the end of the third series, I should be clear.
No.
No.
Although a temporary pod fading for a month or so. We thought we'd just the tips and pod fading.
I was going to say it's more of a summer wobble.
Yes. Well, this is what the summer break is for, but we've decided not to do that. But lots has been going on, so.
We legitimately, and this is not a joke, might have missed the, given that we're doing a news episode, the meatiest like 3 weeks of news in a long time is when we were on hiatus.
A lot has happened.
Yeah, an alarming amount of news.
So yes, I'm Stuart Langridge. I'm here with Jonathan Edward James Bacon and Jeremy Garcia, no middle name at all.
Playing it straight.
I almost don't know what to do.
I decided that maybe your middle name is the Null String, so it doesn't show up. And as you say, because we missed a few weeks in which loads of stuff happened, we thought we'd just talk about news. So, Jono, why don't you kick us off?
So, maybe we can start off with the OpenAI folks. Did you see that they've launched GPT-Bot, which is basically a web crawler that's going to be crawling around the internet? And I mean, obviously, web crawlers are nothing new. They've been around for many years. But OpenAI launched this bot recently, and they're using this to then basically train the model on what it kind of crawls over, essentially. And it's caused a little bit of uproar around this because a bunch of people just, they don't want their content being indexed. So it's kind of putting, there's been a few news articles that have come out basically saying it's kind of putting content creators, people who run websites in a bit of an awkward position. But I don't know if this is any more significantly awkward than a Google bot, you know, traversing your site. I mean, I guess the way in which the data is used is very different, right? So
I didn't fully understand the announcement in that it's clear, very clear, that the model was already trained on basically all of the internet. So the fact that they're now saying they have a web crawler, like they obviously had one before. So
Yes, it did seem like we're launching GPT-Bot. What you've done is you've given the thing you already had and have had running for a decade.
For years and years, to be clear here.
Well, I had assumed, and I don't know a lot about search engines and how they're built, as you're about to discover, but I'd assumed that basically Microsoft had basically given them a massive data set from Bing, and that's what they used on.
Well, I mean, they must have built up a load of this stuff before Microsoft were in charge, right?
I mean, they've been Microsoft OpenAI for a while, right? So,
well, yeah, but I'm assuming the first thing they did, sitting there in whatever garage they set this up in, was to set up a web crawler and run it without telling anybody, right?
Really? I don't know if that'd be the first thing that they do. I think the first thing they do would be, you know, make an AI model that works.
I'm not at all sure.
And probably feed it like a dummy set of data. That's what I would have guessed. Anyway, well,
I was under the impression, and I'm going by memory here, that they were using the what's the name of the open crawl from the beginning, or the beginning's aggressive, from pre-Microsoft days. They were using open crawl. So I I'm not. I don't know if this is just them wanting to be more prescriptive on the rules of engagement. Like, I think it respects robots.txt now and some other things that they might want to have more press around, even though it probably already existed, because OpenCrawl respects robots.txt. So I'm not sure.
I am honestly unsure how I feel about this. I mean, I have written a short poem in honor of GPT-Bot, which you can find on my website at cryogenics.org/robots.txt, which says user agent GPT-Bot disallow /. But
what an artist.
I know, right? It's like, I'm like Lord Byron. But what I'm not sure about is we have gone from this is in theory an improvement, in that we've gone from we're going to take all this stuff and put it in our model and not even tell you we're doing it, to now you have the option of opting out, which is, I suppose, technically an improvement.
I don't think you have the option of opting out. You have the option of not opting in further from today.
Right, yes, okay.
Which is a much, much, much different thing, to be clear.
No, you're right, actually. So there was we're going to do this and there's nothing you can do about it ever. We have done this and there's nothing you can do about it, but you can stop it from now on. But you still have to be technical enough to know about this and to explicitly opt in. And then there's the better option, which is we don't inhale the whole internet without asking first, but that doesn't seem to be on the table. But we have had that discussion already.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, it feels like... It's annoying to me because now they can say, look, you see, you complained that we did it, so we've now given you the option to step back. But it's like, it's still not good enough.
It's going to be an interesting year or so to see how a lot of these things end up progressing and changing. And I think there will be some pretty large fallout. It's just AI is one of those fascinating things that like 2 weeks is – forever, and things are changing so rapidly that predicting it's almost about as accurate as our normal yearly predictions. But I think in aggregate over the next year, you'll see quite a bit of changes here.
It's going to be fascinating as well, without turning this into a broader technology trends conversation, but it's so interesting looking at the crumbling of Web3 compared to how it was just a couple of years ago, and just all of that hype, just as all the air came out of that bubble to a significant degree.
Yeah,
it will be interesting to see what it looks like when it comes to AI as well. So,
although PayPal, who knows? PayPal did launch a stable coin, so Web3 is not completely gone. that's a good point. It will be interesting to, and this is, to be clear, not the first AI bubble either. Like this is probably at least the third ish. This is definitely, I think, the one with the most legs and the most interesting of the three, but is not the first, to be clear, for those who are a little bit newer to the industry.
Yes. This is very, very true.
On the point of robots.txt, there was actually a proposal for an update to the robots.txt format, which I thought was interesting, which basically said, in addition to saying, this robot can see these URLs on my site. No robots can see. So robots.txt, for people who don't know, is a text file you can put at the root of a website, which lists within it rules for robots, automated systems, crawling that website. Now, obedience to what it says is voluntary. There's no actual enforcement here, but most good citizens of the internet, Googlebot, for example, will heed the rules in there. So you can say, Googlebot can only see these URLs and not others. Or Googlebot can't see anything on this website. GPTbot can't see anything, which is what I've done, for example. But the standard is very simple. It was basically thrown together years and years and years ago as sort of an agreement. But there's been a proposal that... it should be expanded to say not only which URLs a particular bot can see, but also what use they can put the data to.
Oh.
So you can say it's fine to crawl this website for the purposes of archiving it, if you're the Internet Archive, or for the purposes of search results, if you're Googlebot, or for the purposes of creating an LLM model, if you want to, or for republishing it. But you'd be able to specify. Now, obviously... the world and is going to get on board with, well, I think we should have this, and we should have this, and that we bike shed it to death. But the basic...
Are we also switching to YAML or something terrible?
I think part of the reason this wouldn't go off the ground is it will end up being like soap or something, and no one will pay attention to it. But blast from the past. I tell you, there are half a dozen other people other than me and you, Jeremy, listening to this podcast who just had like an involuntary shudder, like someone walked over their grave. but I think the concept of this, of expanding it to say, here is a machine-readable set of rules, if whoever's putting these ideas together can get publicity, a groundswell of support behind them, I think it's good. Now, there are a bunch of motives for people to not pay attention to this.
Concern's not the right word. My issue with this would be that only the actors who are in the top X percent of good faith actors will pay any attention to this. The people you want to pay attention the most will pay attention the least. And some people just out of not bad implementations or not understanding it, it won't work. So yes, Google will get it right or OpenAI will get it right, but everyone else will either ignore it or actively ignore it. It's not a contract. It's voluntary. Like, those things only work so far.
But you can imagine a world in which if you had Google and OpenAI, for example, and Microsoft with Bing coming out and saying, hey, we think this is important. This is a big deal. Then if you're setting up your own little thing, which is going to go out and crawl the internet, build an LLM, and then your goal is to sell out for $1 billion, it looks bad if the way you got it is the thing which the titans of the industry have explicitly said is not a good thing. Sure, you can't stop them doing it, but that's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to disincentivize them from doing it by saying, hey, you did something unethical to get this. Maybe you've harmed your company's chances of selling. Sure, it's not going to stop Vladimir Putin's teams from doing it. I thought it was an interesting little extra wrinkle to that. So since we're talking about LLMs and what have you, did you see what MDN did?
By the way, just before we go on, can we just go LLM, 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 LLM?
Idiot.
Just struck me. Anyway, carry on. Sorry, what were you saying about MDN?
You are a fool. Right. So MDN, which is the Mozilla Developer Network, which is basically where all the documentation for the web goes. Did you see this? They added a bunch of LLM stuff and it did not go well.
No. What happened?
So they added two things. There was AI Help and AI Explain. Right. And AI Help was basically, obviously you can search the MDN docs. AI Help was essentially that search engine, but ChatGPT enabled or LLM enabled anyway. And AI Explain, what happened was they decorated every code example on MDN with a button which said explain this, and you could click it, and what it basically did was did a query to an LLM and said explain this in natural language.
Okay.
So you can imagine a world in which this was done sensitively and interestingly and took account of some people's concerns about the whole concept of LLMs and everything, and it was not handled that way. No one seems to be very sure about how it got there, because it just like bunk appeared on the website one day. Right? And MDN, sure, Mozilla, the company, run it. And most of the contributors to it are Mozilla people, but it's at least in theory, at least partially a community product. And there's, you know, there are processes by which you get stuff published there and so on. It reminded me very much, Jono, you'll remember this, of Canonical stuff where technically the community owned it, but every now and again something would just get pushed in without it going through the processes.
I have no recollection of that ever happening once.
Right. But so I have no view on this from the inside, right? This is all purely from the outside, but the vibe I got from it was that kind of thing happened. Since then, what we've seen is there was a huge blab about it because it was handled really badly, right? Which meant that suddenly you got loads of pushback and everyone got on the bandwagon of, hey, don't do this. This is terrible. And now that's being fueled by all the same complaints that everyone's got about LLMs for everything, which is that it gets all the answers wrong and so on.
So just so I'm clear on this, they rolled this out.
Yes.
They rolled this out. It's basically got a button that says, you know, it just generates an AI summary of whatever you're looking into.
There were two parts to it. One of them was summarizing all the existing code examples. So essentially every code example on MDN, which is a huge documentation site for all the web APIs, each one of those code examples basically grew a button which you could click and it would just feed it to an LLM and give you back a natural language explanation of it.
Okay.
And then the other one was essentially a search engine where you could type in queries, and instead of it being keyword search or some other type of search, it was doing LLM search over it.
Right, so what are they upset about? Like, what are people upset about? Are they upset that the fact that it was any kind of AI was used in summarizing this stuff?
There is, for those interested in this topic, a lengthy, detailed postmortem on the Mozilla blog.
Yes, which we will link to in the show notes, and they are there in our show notes. Check it out. So they did actually write up what they did wrong. So there are a couple of issues here. The first one is, yes, there are a lot of people who just object to the idea of LLM stuff and are then objecting partially on that basis and partially coming up with a bunch of reasons that are objections, but their real objection is just, this is AI stuff which you're forcing down our throats for no reason.
And I suspect the number of people in that camp and the number of people who use MDN are higher than the number of people on Earth.
Yeah, I'm
just one clarifying fact, though. Like
The Venn diagram here is either two circles, or you know that thing in films where they have a you get a view through binoculars? And it's not two separate circles at all. It's two very nearly merged circles. That's the Venn diagram of people who are going to be hacked off about being forced into AI stuff and people who use MDN, right?
Yes.
And what clarifying question here, you have to click the button to use the AI thing, right? It doesn't just shove it on the web page.
So said it was live for 65 hours, at which time 24,132 unique visitors used the functionality. They generated 44,229 responses. Which represents 3.34% of the traffic, and 68% upvotes, 31% downvotes. Give you an idea of the usage across it.
So you can go there and not click the button and have broadly the same experience as it was before the AI was added. Okay. Just want to... Okay. Carry on.
But we're now at the point where someone wrote an actual academic paper analyzing... ChatGPT stuff, Stack Overflow answers, MDN, and so on, the use of it, which is quite interesting. And we can link to that as well. But one of the things that they said is they were looking at, are the answers accurate or not? And it does not look good for the AI stuff, you know.
And trending worse, not better, which was fascinating. For a couple months there, it was trending substantially better by the week.
Yeah.
And then there was a plateau, and in the last couple of weeks, it seems to be trending down, which is interesting.
And one of the conclusions they drew in this paper is that people find the answers helpful, and they say this is a helpful answer, basically because it's phrased really nicely and well. Even if the actual answer is wrong, people are voting them helpful anyway, which is, to me, a really interesting point in... I don't know you might call it the aesthetic usability effect, but the idea that if you do well-worded responses to something that people find easy to understand, they'll go, that was helpful, even if the actual thing you're saying is wrong, right? Which I suppose is the current world in microcosm, really, isn't it? But I did think that was interesting. So we're now at the point where there are academic studies going into this and so on. And it's an example of the stuff we were talking about when we talked about GPT-bot. It's this kind of thing that's causing the pushback. Every individual thing is not necessarily a problem, but there's a general feeling of this stuff doesn't necessarily feel ready, but it's being wedged in everywhere anyway.
But question, what did Mozilla do in the end? Did they remove the button or did they leave it on there? What happened.
Yeah, they rolled it back.
Stunning.
They got scorned so hard they burst into flames and undid it happened.
Part of what they said was Explain was originally intended as an experimental feature for logged in users only. Launching it publicly to all users and without a clear indication of its experimental nature was a mistake. And that's when they rolled it back.
Yeah.
So instead of them actually just putting a note next to the button saying, you know, this is a beta feature, you know, your mileage may vary, they just capitulated to the onslaught of criticism.
I think for an organization that all three of us used to be extremely fond of, they're not very well run anymore, to be frank. No.
I think some of that is, if they'd done that at the beginning, if they'd come out and said, hey, we've got this new experimental thing, we're trying to work out whether LLMs can be useful as part of our documentation mission, so we've got this extra button, why not try it out? We'll show it to 10% of you and you can opt out of it, no problem. That would have been good, right? I think people would have gone, oh, interesting, yeah, I don't find totally. It useful. But they didn't do that, and I think the reason they pulled it is because you only get one chance to make a first impression, and they screwed it up.
I think that I don't know if I'd agree with that. Definitely agree with what you just said, though, Stuart, in terms of like if they'd have just said, we're experimenting with this, because everybody is well aware of how inaccurate AI can be in many cases. So just out of pure covering your ass, you'd think that they'd do that anyway. So I'm surprised that they didn't do that. And knowing the potential implications for the community, I think the reason why they they probably rolled it back based upon what I'm hearing from you guys. I've not obviously researched this. Is I think they just gave in. I think they just wanted the community pain to go away. And what I find disappointing about this is, you know, when you think about examples of history of where technology is created that may be imperfect, but what we do is we test it out in the open so people can try it out, and then we provide feedback and we improve it step by step. That's how fucking open source works. So the fact that the community had such a visceral response to it, I find disappointing. But also, if they'd have just managed it, like you say, Akers, this is something we're experimenting with. Here are the pathways in which you can provide feedback and input. You don't have to use it. We're not forcing anyone to use it. This whole thing could have been avoided.
I mean, that's not even how open source works. It's just how technology works.
Yeah.
This is an example of hopeless community management.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I mean, whiners on the internet will always be a there'll always be a place for whiners on the internet, right? But yeah. And now they're going to be spending probably weeks writing article after article about their commitment to collaborative AI, I'm guessing.
Well, and this is exactly the thing, you know, because they screwed that up, they got a whole bunch of people who would have probably been indifferent or would have gone, oh, well, I'm not sure I like that from Mozilla, but whatever, you know, they're trying an experiment, no worries, to immediately go, this is terrible. At which point, all you can do is back away from it. If you double down and be, no, it's an experiment, we're going to carry on with it, everyone stays hacked off with you.
Yeah.
I think.
But I'd find this interesting, but I'm not sure anyone else would.
Which book should they have read to know not to do this, John?
I do think that there is a problem with a broad problem with companies not being straight with their community and pandering to communities, or just not sending expectations clearly. Like, you see this a lot in the open core world where, you know, they have like an open source project and then commercialize something on top of it. But they're not clear, and they don't come out and say, just to be very clear, we're making money in this thing. So we, as the maintainers, will not merge pull requests in for those features. And then what often happens is somebody then creates a free implementation of the commercial feature, and then it causes all kinds of problems, right? And if they'd have just come out and said, look, this is where we're drawing the line, but so many companies don't do that. And it's a problem, in communities.
Because what they're hoping for is they don't want the bad community feedback of saying, hey, we're not going to let your stuff in if it competes with our business model, because then a bunch of people who are doing free work for them might stop and go somewhere else. So they think, well, we don't want to bring this up because then it ignites the kind of pushback that Mozilla just got. But we also don't want to do it. So hopefully it just won't come up. Right? Which is like hiding under your bed away from problems. It does not work, and people should pack it in. But then ask yourself, right? It's not like it's unique to open core or unique to the open source industry, or like Jeremy says, even the technology industry. Last time you were on a phone call on hold, did you think, oh, my call really is important to them? They just lie to us all the time, right?
You tell me that when they say that, that's not real?
I know. I was shocked myself.
It's shattered my perception of FedEx, who should be noted for the record, are utterly fucking incompetent, by the way.
Really?
Based upon my personal experience, lawyers.
If you look at their logo, did you know this? In the negative space, you can see a finger pointing up at you, middle finger. Right. So, or is that UPS?
I thought I knew where you go with that. I, in fact, did not know where you were going.
Now, somebody needs to mock that up and send it to us. Anyway, right. New piece of news. Mr. Bacon.
Did we talk? I genuinely can't remember. Did we talk about the Apple Vision Pro?
Oh, God almighty.
I can't remember if we did.
Right. No. So we have not spoken about it on the show, although
we're gonna.
I now owe myself a pound for the, oh, look, it's more Apple VR bobbins from John O segment. So
did you guys watch the announcement?
No.
The best thing about this is I wish I had my Apple Vision Pro on now because I could close my eyes and go to sleep and you'd have no idea because it would still be projecting open eyes to you. Yes, I saw the announcement. So you describe it.
So they announced this back in June. People have been, for a long time, it's been a pretty badly kept secret that Apple were working on some kind of AR, VR device.
I believe we revealed it on this show.
Yeah.
Like two years ago.
We did. We did. We're like that dude in China who leaks all the Apple news. Ning Chen or whatever the guy's name is. Anyway, so it might be a woman, actually. I actually don't know. I thought it was a guy. Anyway, they announced this Vision Pro headset. And in a nutshell, it's a headset, like you'd expect. It's got super high resolution screens on it, far higher than pretty much anything else on the market right now. It's one of the things that was interesting is it's absurdly priced. It's $3,500 for this thing. But the actual quality of the screen and a lot of the tech that's in there is on par with like the Vario headsets, which are priced at like $8,000 and need like a $1,500 a year subscription. So it's actually less expensive for the equivalents in terms of the tech. But a number of things that I thought were kind of interesting about it. One is, you kind of touched on this, Ak, is that they've got this screen on the front where when you're in like AR mode and you're kind of looking through the cameras on the device, it kind of projects your eyes on there. And one of the things that I thought was actually quite cool about this is that they clearly want this to be used in a work setting or in a family setting. And when somebody, if you're in AR mode where you can see the world around you, people can see your eyes and it means that they can see you as well. But when you're in VR mode, the screen on the front of the headset kind of gets covered in this kind of blue fog. And then if somebody walks into your vicinity, they kind of appear out of nowhere from VR as this hovering kind of giant. And then their eyes appear as well. So they're actually, I thought that was actually quite an innovative idea in how they're trying to create an environment where you're bridging the real world, you know, the AR world and the VR world, which I thought was kind of interesting. Another couple of things that I thought was interesting was there's absolutely zero control. It's all hand tracking, which is quite a bold move. I think there's not many VR headsets that are doing that. It's beautifully designed. The thing that is not beautifully designed is you've got this like battery pack that's hanging out the back of it on a cord, which I'm sure they'll get rid of at some point in the future when the tech is better.
And that battery pack lasts 2 hours.
Yeah. this is an issue with a lot of these devices, right? Is they don't last long.
Because it's a gargantuanly powerful combination of a phone and a laptop, which you have to wear on your head, right? I don't necessarily blame them for having not much battery life, but equally, there's not much battery life. And they did a very good job in the videos and everything of not making the cable very obvious and not showing the great big box and everything.
It is unusually clunky for an Apple because I think we'd all agree Apple devices are beautiful looking and
the aesthetics are so Apple, and then that one aspect of it is so not Apple that you know it annoyed them when they released it.
It's like a tiny bit of Samsung on the back of the Apple headset.
What amazed me most about it is that every laptop on earth apart from Apple laptops has a big thick cable that you can't wind up properly and a big power brick on the lead and everything. And Apple people were always somewhere in between proud and sneery about the fact that theirs didn't. And it had a very lovely thin cable, which you could wind up. And there was just the plug that plugged into the wall and no great big power brick. And I've not heard word one out of people going, oh, actually, that's really terrible. It's like, you thought it was terrible for my Toshiba laptop. You're not saying it now about your stupid $4,000 sunglasses. Oh, shut up. But yes.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking what else is kind of notable about it before we get into it. As you both know, I've been paying attention to VR. I don't use VR hardly at all. I've got a Quest 2 and I just bought a Pimax Crystal headset that should be arriving today, actually. But it's one of the things that I thought was especially interesting was the UI for it. So it's got eye tracking, and when you look at something, and you kind of pinch your fingers to kind of select things. You know, basically you look at something and then you pinch your finger, and then it's got voice chat to how you interact with it. And the announcement is one thing. What I was curious to see was all the journalists who used it after the announcement. And the one word that everybody consistently said is that it felt like magic, was that the quality of the displays and the experience was a real step up. And I actually think that that's pretty encouraging. But one of the things that they talked about, and then I'll shut up, is it can also take these like 3D pictures, right? So apparently they have an example of like a birthday scene. And a lot of these journalists said, like, when you're watching this playback of a video, it really is kind of surreal. You feel like you're seeing it in front of you. And it's kind of odd because you're watching a kid's birthday party and you feel like you shouldn't be there. There's like this kind of immediate reaction. But the stupid thing is, to record those scenes, you need to wear the headset, which nobody's going to do. Yeah. So they're going to need to stick it on an iPhone for that to work. And I just don't know. That requires multiple cameras mounted on iPhones. I'm sure they'll get there at some point with the iPhone, and that's how we'll take the pictures. But
that,
anyway,
to me, was the thing about the birthday party that I thought was weird. That you're like, fine, okay, you're doing this incredible recording and thing which you can live back on later. But what that means is you're showing up to your kid's birthday party with your Darth Vader helmet on, filming everything rather than hanging out with your kid, right? What are you doing?
Daddy's in the internet.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, what struck me as interesting is how much of a different approach they took than Meta, right? Because they were basically like, how can we design something that's aesthetically pleasing and really will be a device that can take some of the rough edges and augment slightly the things you do at work or travel or productivity as a slight up-leveling of life? Where Meta was like, why don't we immediately try to replicate the most meaningful human interactions you have with a legless Zuck? Like, that's just so philosophically different.
Yeah, so the Meta people are like, okay, what you should do is put the headset on and then never ever take it off again and spend the rest of your life inside Second Life.
Yeah, Ready Player One is here now and go.
But
it is,
the Apple thing I thought was interesting for a different reason. For that. Sure, the AR stuff, which I think is the direction they're going to lean in, isn't too bad. But if you look at the non-AR stuff, the videos I saw of, which are obviously very limited, as far as I can tell, everyone who's actually played with the thing wasn't allowed to be filmed playing with it or film what it shows you or anything. So all we've got is half a dozen Apple-produced videos of what it is. But you actually look at the UI inside it. Sure, it's amazingly clever that you can just look at a thing and touch your fingers together, it does it. But the thing you're looking at is basically just a great big iPad.
Well,
I was a bit disappointed in that. I was expecting, you know, kind of individual pop-ups around everything in the room, and it just goes badonk and sticks an iPad in front of your face. I'm like, I could do that with an iPad. I'm sure that will change and improve, but
yeah,
Jeremy's literally pantomiming holding up an iPad in front of his eyes, which is what it is. Yeah. Oh man, we do a video version of this.
it is going to be interesting because, I mean, you know, I've not been tracking Apple's history carefully, but a bunch of people who do have said, like, this is very much in keeping with Apple. The first version of something that they do, it's very expensive. They create a limited number of, they have limited inventory to buy it. In many cases, like with the Apple Watch, apparently you had to go into like Apple stores to get it fitted and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in line with what they've done. But I think where this is going to be really interesting to watch how this unfolds is just, it's so invasive putting something on your head. That's what stood in the way of VR and AR, right? Yeah. And apparently the AR glasses that Apple were working on have been put on hold for a while. So, but what will be interesting is to see what developers come up with. Like, they had like this bit in the demo where they were showing like people watching like a basketball game, I think it was. And it's kind of on their table and they're looking at it from different angles, and that kind of thing I think will be really interesting to see. They're clearly filming TV shows that will be in 3D as well because they've got Apple TV. So yeah,
well, if they could nail the experience of, I might not be able to travel to a Bills away game, I'm an NFL fan for those who don't know what the Bills are, if I can't go to the game, but I could get an experience that's close-ish to being in a stadium and being able to just look around to see things. That's The potential there's amazing.
Yeah, I mean that does seem pretty cool. Do you have to buy a device which pours beer down your back every now and again?
You still have to buy the table and jump through it, but the rest is right there in the headset.
But I can totally see that as an experience. Yeah, and you could basically record that once and then sell it to everybody.
Right. And that's, you could change how you watch some kinds of sports. Yeah. Like for F1, you could put people basically in the car, which is an experience that you clearly can't get now. So I think some of the potential is super, super interesting.
Yeah. But to me, that is the thing I am doing is looking at the inside of the headset. I stop doing everything else I'm doing and I participate in this thing, which sure, I happen to be doing it in my own living room with a headset on, but I might just be at the Bills Stadium instead, whereupon I'm also not in the pub or in the library or at work or whatever. The idea that you should have this on and do other stuff at the same time, which is the point of AR rather than VR, was, I thought, the direction Apple were going in, but the idea of having this thing on for your five-year-old's birthday party is such a staggering misunderstanding of what people will do.
I think that was a demo. I don't think that.
Sure.
I don't think Apple are going to. I think they know that that's not viable. There's no doubt in my mind that it will not be the iPhone 16. It will probably be the iPhone 17. They will have the ability to take 3D videos on it.
Right. Because to me, that's the thing. It surprised me that Apple, who are careful crafters of the message that they put out, would have picked that as an example to showcase the device. We all agree it's not a good idea, but normally Apple would go, that's not a good idea. Let's not make it the centerpiece of our presentation.
Yeah. I mean, what will be interesting as well to see is that I honestly think that this is VRs and ARs. This is, if it doesn't work for Apple, it's going to decimate that industry.
Well, yes,
because Apple have got they've got the relationships with the content creators. I mean, they did a deal with Disney. They're a very widely respected brand. If this fails, it's going to be a disaster for AR and VR.
Did you see Brownlee's review of it? MKBHD. I thought that was really good. Actually,
it's really good. Yeah, I love his stuff.
Yeah, because in my opinion, at least, he's not got skin in any of the games in particular.
No, he's objective, isn't he?
Yeah. Doesn't lean in one direction or another. I'm sure people who build things that he didn't like would claim he was biased, but I don't think he is. And he's prepared to say, no, I dig Apple stuff, but also dig Android stuff. I dig the Meta device, you know, the 1500 Quest Pro or whatever it's called. And I thought his thing was good because he said some of this stuff is amazing. He called out the eye tracking being amazing and just pinching your fingers together. But also, basically, what he called it was a rich person's toy.
Yep.
The question is whether they can turn it from being a rich person's toy into something a bit more normal.
The thing that's concerning is, from what I understand, they're having such a hard time building the damn thing, and it's primarily, from what I've read, it's the screen on the front of the device. They've got this like curved OLED screen. It's so hard to build those. Like the company that they're using to manufacture those has really low yield on the
production. I think
they've
reduced it at least twice, if not maybe three times, the number they expect to ship.
Exactly. Yeah. And they've been setting up they've released the SDK for it, but then they've got locations where developers can kind of go in and test out their apps. And it's like that's got to be a temporary stopgap. They're going to have to be able to get, these devices in the hands of developers. I'm kind of astonished that for a $1 trillion company, they didn't just build 50,000 of these things, or even just 10,000 of these things, and just ship them to developers for free, like known quantities, you know, known developers, just start building stuff. Like the fact that you got to go into a store to go and test your app on one of these headsets is ridiculous.
I would guess that gives you some insight into just how difficult they are to produce.
Is to make them. Yeah.
Yeah. This is
so,
the thing.
But we'll see what happens. I can guarantee one thing. I will be buying one.
Well, I was going to say, will you buy it as soon as it comes out, even if the reviews aren't great? Or would you wait for version 2 or version 3?
I am 100% pre-ordering it. And I'm not expecting to get one. Because I think it will be... I think it's going to be like a bum rush to get one.
Yeah, yes, you're not kidding. Well,
do you remember how difficult it was to get a PlayStation 5? I think it's going to be even worse to get one of these things. So
it will honestly be interesting to see whether it is worse, because it took ages to get a PlayStation 5, but everybody wanted one. What's going to be interesting about this is there will be fewer people who want it than want a PlayStation 5, but there were fewer of them as well. It's whether people go, but I really, really need it, or whether people sort of back away and go, well, we're just not going to get one, then never mind. Walking that tightrope,
I suspect it's going to be quite difficult to get.
I'm sure it is going to be quite difficult to get, but the question is not, is it difficult to get? It's whether lots and lots of people are pushing for it and haven't got it. You know?
Yeah. And we will see.
It will be interesting.
What's next?
So, this is more sort of a brief question for you than anything else, but in the last couple of months, social media has gone crazy.
Can we reframe that as crazier?
Okay, yeah. But I'm not particularly thinking about the precipitous decline of, I suppose I'm supposed to call it X now, aren't I? But we've also seen Reddit go weird and then maybe come back again. The Instagram thread stuff started up. Blue Sky started up, and they didn't really set the world alight. And we're now a couple of months in, and I suspect this is more a Jono question than a Jeremy question. But I'm interested in your thoughts. Like, I haven't even used the threads thing at all. But what the hell's going to happen?
Well, did you see that they had the news stories were all over, like, the Twitter X killer has been launched and massive amounts of people signing up. And what that was you can't use it unless you
have an Instagram account.
Have an Instagram account, right?
So if you have an Instagram account, it was like, hey, click here once to have a Threads account. At which point, loads of people went, sure, why not, bosh? And they went, check out how many millions of users we've got. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, if you need to be able to kind of stuff the ballot box when it comes to signups, no problem. That's a great strategy.
And it turns out porting a visual social graph to a text-based social graph does not work even over 2 weeks, because it's just, you follow different people. People that are good at one are probably not good at the other. Like, it was an interesting decision.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, so few people then started going back in, it's like,
still doesn't have a
surprise
website.
Face.
Like, it's only mobile, which is weird.
That's annoying.
Can't use it on the web. You have to use the app. So you can't even try it out without fully committing. And I don't know if there's anyone alive who isn't aware of what happens when you install a Facebook app on your phone. Lots of people are like, I'm fine with it. But I don't think there's anybody who doesn't know anymore.
That's a great point.
So, I mean, Jono, I assume you've tried Threads?
Yes.
I haven't even tried it. What's the... I mostly don't care about this stuff anymore. Sure, there was one that I liked and it got burned, and now I'm a Mastodon guy, like I used to be a Google Plus guy. I don't care if it conquers the world or not. I get to talk to my mates, and that's all I'm really bothered about.
Yeah. My review would be...
what's your review of Threads, Jono?
I was by no means... I mean, it took me like a week. I just didn't care that much. Signed up.
I was about the same.
Their onboarding is easy, and it's great. Like, and it's clever how they basically... You go and follow the people you were already following, or people who follow you on Instagram. So you get that immediate dopamine hit of, I'm connected to people who I know. I recognize these names, which is clever that they did that. You don't start out from scratch again. And it's just kind of the same as Twitter. I think the UI for me feels clunkier and less intuitive than Twitter. And I don't like the fact that, and they may have changed this, but like if you want... When you go in to look at notifications, you have to like do two clicks to get to notifications, right? You click on the notifications bubble, and then it shows you number of followers, people you're following, responses, and then something else. And you've got to click again to see it. Like on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, you just click on responses and it takes you right there, right? So, but they'll fix all these little issues. But other than that, the problem I have is that it just doesn't add anything new. Right,
and what's the
not
point
being
in it
Twitter
existing?
Is not enough.
Yeah,
right. Because the people who hate Twitter have already gone, and they're not coming back. So the people who are on Twitter, people like myself, don't hate Twitter. Maybe not huge fans of it, but like ain't going anywhere. So you got to be better. Got to be different. And I don't think it's different enough. So, and it's Facebook.
I think if you look at the people that are on Twitter, there's a couple different modalities, but most people are following top. Like, if you're into bringing it back to the Bills, if you're into any kind of sports, the best way to ingest information these days, or not anymore, but was on Twitter. You could watch a game, and famous sports medicine doctors would analyze an injury real time.
Yeah.
You would be getting updates in a way that is really not possible anywhere else but somewhere like what Twitter used to be. And I think Threads didn't replicate that experience. They went for, here's a bunch of influencers shouting into the void, and like nobody cares.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, that it's like a similar pattern to what happened with Blue Sky, is there's an influx of people and then crickets.
I don't think no one cares about influencer types, but I don't think there's the staying power for it. Like you say, I mean, the advantage with Twitter as was. Now, actually, we can now say the advantage with Twitter, right? Because X does not have this advantage because it's rubbish. But the advantage with Twitter was that it did have things like that.
I also think genuinely, like, Twitter was a moment in time and had an outsized impact for the number of users it had in a way that will never, like, Twitter, I think we can all admit or agree here, the product development at Twitter was terrible. Like, what they did over the last 5 years is astonishingly minimal.
Yes.
But I don't think there was a path to keep what the people who liked Twitter liked and get to the kind of numbers that you see at Meta. I think those two goals are almost diametrically opposed, right? Because what people liked was deep knowledge about a thing in real time in a very almost siloed type of way, in a way that is just not the general, the average consumer is never going to want that. Right. You have to be somewhat, I think, into technology. You have to be somewhat into real time, wanting to know and be connected. And that limit, like, every one of those things you add limits you, where Instagram is more of a fun consumer thing and you can get to billions of users with that. Twitter, I don't think ever would get to billions of users, and trying to get it to billions of users would make it a thing that people don't actually end up wanting.
Well, and to your point, Jeremy, when we look back on when Twitter became a thing, I remember back then, most of us had the same response, which was like, well, why would I go and share that I bought a bottle of milk and put it on Twitter? That was the common kind of refrain about it. But then for me, it was like, oh, wow, Stephen Fry's on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I can interact with him.
Yeah.
And that, like, access to people was really compelling, which now is nothing new about that, right? Like, it was that moment in time. So What's the new moment for Threads?
And I think, interestingly, at that moment in time, you didn't just have famous people there. They were famous people using it themselves. Now, Blue Sky has that, but only for half a dozen of them. John Scalzi.
Yeah, not many, yeah.
And Neil Gaiman, and a few people like that are there. But other than Jake Tapper is a big fan. But other than that, most people aren't there. Twitter had that. The problem with the Threads-y influencer types is none of the influencers are actually there sharing, oh, hey, I bought a bottle of milk. They're saying, someone in their social media team is saying, should we say they bought a bottle of milk? Yeah, let's do that, because it makes them seem relatable, which entirely defeats the point, right?
Yeah. You got sucked
into
the... Or it's
milk brought to you by Oreos, because if you have an Oreo, don't you need this milk? And it's like, can you not advertise at me every second of every day?
Yes, that is 100% correct, and 100% not what we're looking for, people. It's like, how do we appear authentic? You have missed the point. Just asking the question is to answer it.
It's interesting. It's going to be interesting. We should do this at some point, maybe 6 months from now, but it'd be interesting to just do a recap. There's been so much going on, like you said at the beginning of this discussion, around social media, Twitter, like Elon taking over Twitter, it switching over to X, there's Threads, Facebook has faced privacy issues and all kinds of stuff. It'd be interesting to see, and there's Blue Sky and all these others, it'd be interesting to see what the landscape looks like in 6 months, and especially if any of these companies have actually managed to make any money from this. right?
What do you mean it'd be interesting in 6 months? It'd be interesting to know what the landscape looks like on Saturday.
Sure. It would.
I've got no idea. What's worse, it's not just that I don't have no idea. I don't even know where to find out the latest news now. Like, I'm supposed to get told about what's happening on Twitter, and now I don't use it anymore.
Yeah. It is like social media has kind of like reached the age of 12, and it's kind of stepping into the abyss of puberty, and it's trying to figure out what it is, and its self-identity, and how it's going to support itself. Man, and it's starting to smell a little bit.
This does sound like a show.
This does. Make a note of this, because we should probably go into this. But yeah, that was the thing, really. Obviously, we could spend the rest of our lives talking about social media, and probably will do so.
And we will, in fact. Yeah, but we'll be old men with beards.
I know. Talking about, do you remember Friends reunited? That was great.
Oh, yeah. Orcas.
No one used it. You didn't even use Orca, I don't think, did you?
No. Isn't it supposed to be massive in Latin America or something?
Yeah, you had to Brazil, be in Brazil or something to get it. Just give me Google Plus back and then shut up.
I don't like Google Plus for one main reason, is that it significantly dates The Art of Community. Because I just discovered Google Plus when I was writing the book. So it's packed with Google Plus. This is the future of social media.
So first book I wrote, The HTML Utopia, back in 2005, 2006, whenever I wrote it. The idea of JavaScript libraries had just basically been created. So the book goes on about this thing called Sarissa, which was a little wrapper library to do things like make requests for web pages off of the internet from client-side JavaScript. And the book goes on and on and on about it. And it was the thing at the time, but it's obviously sunk without a trace down. No one remembers it. So your friend of mine, Bruce Lawson, takes every opportunity to rip the piss out of me for the whole book mentioning it about 12 times. And you're exactly the same with the art community in Google Plus. Yes. People are reading it going, it keeps going on about this Google ad thing. I don't understand what it means.
So we've only got about, what, 8 or 9 minutes left. Should we do one more, maybe? Should we squeeze one more in?
Go for it.
What do you want to do? What about, this is kind of an interesting one. Did you hear about, there's like a $5 billion lawsuit with Google over incognito mode tracking.
There is.
There's like, I think two or three people are on the lawsuit, and they basically said that when, this is what I understood from briefly looking into this, I might be wrong, but when you spin up incognito mode, it gives you the impression that your activity is not going to be detected or tracked, whereas that's in fact not the case. And what I couldn't determine from this is whether Google are in fact tracking analytics in incognito mode, and that's going back to Google, or whether what I think it might be more is, even though you're in incognito mode, it still means your ISP knows what you're looking at and things like that. So, anyway, it looks like a judge
same,
has
been... I somehow missed this. Is this the same lawsuit from like 2 years ago that finally...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So I just opened a new incognito window, and it clearly says your activity might still be visible to, and it's a bulleted list, websites you visit, your school, your employer, your internet service provider. So they seem... pretty explicit.
You see, I think the argument, so I am not a lawyer, and the detail of the legal case is not something I'm qualified to comment on, but the vibe, I believe that the accusers are attempting to put across is that, sure, Google go, hey, here's incognito mode. Now, you might be tracked in that. We can't do anything to stop that, though. Technology is imperfect and so on. But it seems extremely disingenuous to go, here is incognito mode where you might be tracked, including by us. That I think, is the thing they're trying to put across, that it seems rather dishonest to say, well, we've done the best we can to protect you, but technology sometimes works like this, while you, Google, yourselves, are also tracking people in this mode, right?
Are they? Are Google tracking them, though?
Yep.
So if I go to
Well, sorry. So the accusation has been made that they've said that they are they're able to track people in private browsing in incognito mode. They are able to correlate that user with the other user account, so they can send you personalized ads, even based on stuff that you did in private browsing.
So if I go, into incognito mode and I go to gingerstallions.dev or .biz or .whatever,
definitely .biz.
It's definitely not biz. They are tracking my activity. Because it says here, you can browse privately, but other people who use this device won't see your activity. So they're saying other people, excluding Google.
Well, no. But this is exactly the point. That, as I say, the basic argument they're attempting to make is extremely disingenuous of Google to say, here is private browsing mode, and we'll try and protect. We're trying to protect you from being tracked. And then going ahead and tracking you anyway, rather than saying we did our best to stop other people from tracking you. The fact that they're also one of the trackers looks pretty off. And I think that's a legitimate argument. Google's argument is, well, we said you know, you're not prevented from tracking, and that's all we've got to say. Now, I think legally Google are probably in the right there, because they said, you know, we said that we, you know, maybe you'd be tracked around. The fact that we're one of the people who can track you from it, you know, you were warned. Hands off, caveat emptor, right? But yeah. This comes down, I think, to a question of whether the court will rule on, yeah, dude, Google people, sure, you've technically worded it correctly, but we're not necessarily going to go for that, or whether, well, you warn people and that's all you're legally required to do. This is like, you know, sort of big picture questions about, are you allowed to do anything you like as long as you write it in your terms and conditions and say, well, they clicked agree, so I'm allowed to take their firstborn son and throw them into a jet turbine, because here it is in section 2, subsection P, number 5. It says we're allowed to do anything we like with you, up to and including cramming a live rattlesnake up your ass, and you ticked agree. So, but courts tend to go, we don't think that people have fully given consent to this.
Right.
And if they had understood the situation in more detail, they wouldn't have agreed to this. And therefore, we think it's iffy that you didn't try hard enough to make sure they were giving informed consent. But this is very much a big picture vibe. And the US courts tend to feel differently than, say, EU courts do about this.
I don't know this to be the case, because I don't particularly track in my head what incognito mode says before I go to some website in incognito mode. But having loaded it up, and to Jeremy's point, looking at the screen, I'm pretty sure a bunch of this information was not there previously. Like, I love how it's like, you've got incognito. You can browse privately, and other people on this device won't see your activity. However, Chrome won't save your browsing history, cookies, or information entered into forms, but websites you visit might see it. Your employer can. The internet service can. Internet service provider could.
There's a lot
of info on that page that takes you away from, oh, I'm completely invisible to the internet. And they've made it very clear. They've said, you are not invisible, right? That's been Google's response, so...
Yeah, now the page has been like that for a long time. Chrome might say the following information, your browsing history, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sure. And this is the question, whether they can say, we told them this stuff and that's all true, so what the hell are we being busted for? Or whether the courts say, yeah, but you're giving people the impression they're being protected while you're tracking them.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit off. So it will be interesting to see what comes of this. But it's been going on forever. The thing which happened in the news was that Google asked for summary judgment and the judge went no. So as I understand it, again, not a lawyer, but what Google was saying was, hey, judge, what you should do is just go, well, Google have just obviously won. We don't even need to bother continuing. And the judge went, lol, no. But if an actual lawyer corrects me on that, then I'd be happy to be corrected. But that's my understanding of what
I believe attempt. You will be corrected, but not from a lawyer.
Will this lawyer have an armchair, Charles?
Yes, this lawyer will indeed have an armchair.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see that. I mean, part of this plays into how it's Google is big enough, easily big enough, that there is no one Google view on a lot of stuff, and especially on something like privacy.
Yeah.
That people say, well, but Google said this, but Google also said that. That's contradictory. And you're like, okay, the two people saying that have never met, never will meet, and are in organizations which have a fundamentally different understanding and appreciation and value of user privacy and user security.
Yes.
And you are considerably closer in your business goals and alignment to the bloke who lives next door to you and doesn't even work in your industry than two people at opposite ends of Google are to one another.
Yeah.
And, you know, all big companies are the same, I think, to be honest.
Some small companies, yeah.
We will see how it pans out. So I guess we should wrap up this show. Before we wrap things up, though, Jeremy, how was Dash?
Yeah, Dash went, part of the reason for our hiatus, Dash went very well. Thank you.
Good. It looked amazing on the internet. Yeah. So that must have been a huge amount of work putting it together, right?
It was quite a bit of work. But full building, everything went really well. Customers were super happy. So all good.
Wow. Do you think, do you think with where we are with COVID and everything, like things are mostly back for Dash? Things a bit different. So,
no, I think just from the last couple of larger conferences that I have attended, things seem to be back to normal. Hopefully,
finally,
I know.
Finally, well, good job, man.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so we should say before we go, the person who's editing this, so we're saying this, so he hears us, but you get to hear as well, is Marius Quarbeck from NerdZoom Media, who has been very patient with us going, we're not doing a show 15 minutes before we're not doing it, or 3 days before we're not doing it, or a week before we're not doing it, because everyone's been all over the place for the last month or so.
Yeah.
So we're sorry to have messed you around, gentle listeners, but it's the way it goes, you know, sometimes we're busy.
Get what you pay for.
Yes.
And luckily, we don't track who's listening, so all good. You really are in incognito mode right now.
Yes.
A combination of inability and just, frankly, just uselessness. Yeah.
Yes. Ineptitude, inaccuracy. And, I mean, we can honestly say we don't care about your privacy. but it's because we don't care, right?
We do not care.
Yes. But if you need editing work doing or anything to do with audio stuff and anything, talk to Marius at nerdzoom.media because he's great, and thank you very much.
He is. Thank you, Marius. And thank you. With that, we will see you on the next one.
Recording.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Aren't you introing it?
Oh, I thought you... Okay.
Isn't that what you literally just said?
No, you're right.
Minutes,
you're right, actually.
Multiple minutes of pre-show work. Right down the drain.
I was sitting there waiting, thinking, right, Jono's doing the intro, then we'll kick in. No, you're right. Okay, sorry. No,
I always love it when we have this awkward blank stare at each other.
I'm like, hang on. Who's Gary, is it?
Is he just waiting for the pause, or is he actually going to fucking introduce the show? All right.
This is like one of those moments where you go, I'm taking over the ship, and the lads are all with me, and the captain goes, what lads? And you look behind you and go, right.